This episode is brought to you by our free website startup from Church Media HQ. It seems that with many popular website platforms out there, you are paying them for the privilege to build your own website. There's very little, if any, service and support, and you're pretty much just on your own. At Church Media HQ, our team does all the heavy lifting by setting up and providing ongoing support for your church's website. And of course, there's no risk to you because we actually start the design of your website for free. There's no credit card required, and you only pay if you like what you see. So get our team started on your new website for free today at churchmediahq.com/web. That's churchmediahq.com/web. Well, today's guest is Dean Heasley of Burrow Business Labs right here in my hometown of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Dean has taught me a lot about websites, web presence in general, things like SEO, local Google business listings, social media, email marketing, and we talk about a lot of that in our conversation. Dean is really an expert, a master of his craft, if you will. And so I know that you are going to be greatly helped by my conversation with Dean. So let's get right to it. My name is Luke Clayton. I'm your host. Thanks for being with us, and welcome to Church Media HQ. When you use the Apple voice assistant, because I don't know if you just heard, but she thought she heard her name and my watch was talking to me.
Right.
So I don't want to say it again, but the Apple voice assistant, I believe there when you say, hey, you know, hey, that person,
right,
find local restaurants. I believe Apple Maps is integrated with the Yelp. Is that
correct?
Yeah. So that and Apple Maps, because of that Apple voice assistant, is a big one, at least in that mobile world, iPhone world or whatever. So, yeah, I can see why Yelp is important.
And they're all intertwined. So we have one client who changed the hours of her restaurant, and they're unusual hours now. And every week I will go in and change them. And we just did a bunch of digging, and we found that the reason that Google keeps reverting them back is because her Yelp listing has the old hours in it. From a different listing that had been kind of buried underneath the surface and had not been claimed. So, and like I said, that's part of that whole digital ecosystem where Google will pull information from other sources, and they might give that more of a priority than what you're telling it. So it all has to be consistent and work together. But as far as reviews go, I like to explain it this way. Google's first patent, before they were even Google, I forget what the name was based on ranking the contents of the internet, not on what was on the website, but what other websites said about a certain website. Cool. So Google, their whole process of ranking is based on third-party credibility or lack of credibility. And so with local search, the way that they do that, one of the biggest factors is reviews, because it's a real human saying positive or negative things about your business. So it's that third party credibility that Google's looking towards when they're serving, you know, church information to other people. I just met with somebody like 3 weeks ago, and she found her church based on a Google search, and she looked at reviews.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is crazy to me, but for new people, new Christians, that they're searching for churches in the exact same way they're searching for any other local business.
Yep.
So the review thing is so very, very important. Mm-hmm. And that's why for us, we don't charge separately for number five. That's in with number one.
Okay.
So if somebody were to...
So they're kind of one and the same in terms of the way you see it from a billing perspective.
Yes, exactly. So number one and number five, we lump together for our services because those reviews are so important.
Gotcha.
And they're attached to those local directories. So it's Google, Facebook, Yelp. Well, those are where the information has to be similar. That's where we have to get reviews. They're very, very intertwined.
Yeah. So how do you, you know, how do you go about getting them? I mean, I know you mentioned just asking for them, hitting up your email list or maybe hitting that up on social media every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Hey, leave us a review. But do you have like a, a specific process or best practices or whatever and how to get those?
Yes. So it depends on the volume of business that the client does. So let's say for a realtor, they may do, a good realtor is going to do 3 to 5 deals a month. My realtor clients, I just tell them, listen, when you close a deal, send me that person's name and email address, and I'll send them a request to leave you a review. We have some other clients that serve 200 or 300 people a week. And so on a weekly basis, they just send me a spreadsheet. I upload the spreadsheet with names and emails, and then we send out requests that way. So a kind of a good rule of thumb is 5 to 7% of the people that you ask to leave you a review are going to actually do it. Unless it's a super high touch situation, like with realtors. I mean, your realtor's handling $500,000 deal for somebody. It's going to be the biggest financial investment most people will ever make. So that person's got a lot of trust and there's been a relationship built over time. So we coach our clients to ask in certain ways and at certain times. So we always want the ask to happen at the height of happiness for the transaction. So when the customer's brain is releasing all that dopamine and endorphins, ask for the review then. And the second thing is give a specific reason, like a numeric reason. For example, the email that we just sent out, we said, look, we have an aggressive goal to get to 35 five-star reviews by the end of August. Can you help us?
Wow. Yeah.
So give a very specific reason, even if it's a self-serving reason. The human brain is more inclined to answer and respond when a reason is given than just when a question is asked.
Yeah. And I can't help but think there's a part, you know, especially somebody's going to leave you a review, was probably someone who likes you.
And I
can't help but think that going back to StoryBrand, they to some extent feel like a part of the story and they want to have a part in this mission, if you will.
Yes.
Like, hey, oh, you want to hit that 35 by the end of August? Boom, I'm in.
Right.
And count me in. You know, like you said, the 5 to 7% that actually do it, but that's going to be how they're thinking.
Yes. Yes.
So then, as far as obviously there's all these different places to review, there's Google, Yelp. Is Google, maybe you already said this, is it the most important?
Yeah.
Okay. So are you just kind of strategically asking like, hey, right, you know, this month we're going to ask for Google reviews and next month we're going to ask for Yelp or.
So we give every customer the option. We normally give them 3 buttons. One's Google. The top one is Google and then Facebook and then Yelp. When we have targeted specific review platforms, it's typically been Yelp because Yelp, I think the average star rating on Yelp is 2.4. So people go to Yelp to complain. And so we don't want those negative reviews showing up in Apple and Bing. So if we have a client that's deficient in Yelp, then we'll do a campaign specifically for that. But most people will just leave it on Google.
Gotcha.
And then if it's in the hospitality industry, we throw in TripAdvisor as well, because that's pretty important.
Do you have, because I was talking to a guy years ago about a kind of, they did a similar thing. They did a lot of local, you know, ad listing and reviews. And I believe their approach at the time, at least, was they had like, when they asked for reviews, it was a form. And it was like, hey, go and give us your review on this form. If it was like below 4 stars, they would redirect you to hey, here's just a place where you can kind of like air your grievances and we'll see it, but it's not going to go public.
Right.
But if you did leave 4 or 5 stars, then it was like, hey, well, why don't you just do that here on Google? I mean, is that approach effective or, you know, what are maybe some pros and cons of that approach?
So the pros are it's a natural gateway for people to segment themselves out of leaving a negative review. Which is good because then it makes more people leave a positive review and fewer people leave a negative review. The con is Google has technically said, if you do that, we're going to take your reviews away. I've never had it happen to a client, but I always kind of leave that up to the client. most of them err on the side of, let's just leave kind of the thumbs up, thumbs down in there. Mm-hmm. But technically, Google has said, please don't do that.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I could see how it's a little bit, you know, disingenuous, because if you really do get people to have a bad experience, you're not allowing them to report it publicly, if you will.
Right.
So I can maybe understand the regulation there. I was just curious about what you thought about that approach. And like,
so. Yeah. So we do that approach for our clients.
Okay.
Most of my clients will just not ask. Like, if I get a spreadsheet and somebody had an obviously terrible time at their business, we just delete that person. We just don't ask them.
Yeah.
So most of the reviews that we get are positive. Most of the reviews that are negative that we get have not happened through the review platform. It's happened by someone just going to Google and putting them on blast anyway. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a process for handling those type of negative reviews.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
So reviews, it's important to,
very important.
And obviously we're speaking pretty specifically to local businesses here, mm-hmm. and local, but again, churches are going to fall in this category.
Yes.
That was what, step five?
Yes.
Anything step else five. There before we move on to six?
I will say, and this is not something that we do, but the sentiment of your brand is very important online. And I'll give you a short story that kind of makes an example of it. My dentist client, she's been with me for over 5 years now. She was number two when you would search for Murfreesboro dentist forever. Oh. Until the number one guy got arrested for malpractice.
Oh, wow.
Like, not malpractice, Medicare fraud. He was doing something fraudulent. And he got arrested and went to jail. And there was all this negative press. Like 2 days after that happened, he dropped from number one to like number 20.
Wow.
So Google says they don't do that, but they do. Like, mm-hmm. the general sentiment of your brand is a ranking factor. And so, I mean, it was good for my client because
yeah.
she's number one.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
But so if there is a scandal at your church or at your business, either try to minimize the effects of that digitally, or you have to be proactive in the future on putting out positive mm-hmm. press releases and getting positive reviews and kind of overshadowing that negative reputation,
yeah.
because it can hurt you digitally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the unfortunate thing is that if a scandal happens in the church world, that hurts you on so many levels,
yes.
beyond just your digital reputation.
Right.
The sad thing is a lot of churches are guilty of trying to cover it up. And,
yes.
and obviously we're not saying cover it up. We're saying right. in your digital, the way you manage this digitally becomes really important.
Yes.
So anyways, I think that's a good thing to point out. So reviews are important. So what's the next one? Number six.
So the sixth one is paid ads. And for us, that's, Google ads. And really the reason that's important is because you can kind of pay your way to the top of the search results, mm-hmm. especially for a local business. When you do a search, you're not just getting the organic search results. You're getting three different types of results. You're getting mm-hmm. ads first, and then you're getting the map pack, which is a different algorithm than the organic results. So if you want to be on all three, that's really ideal. So we do paid ads for our clients, and pay-per-click means every time somebody clicks on your ad, you're going to write Google a little mini check. Mm-hmm. There are things we can do to make the cost per click less, but it is an auction format. Mm-hmm. So if you've got 10 competitors in your area paying for, you know, the keyword church near me, and they're willing to pay $5 a click, then you have to be willing to pay $5.01 mm-hmm. a click to get to the, you know, to get above them
yeah.
on the search results page.
Yeah, sure.
So it can be expensive, and Google knows what industry you're in and how much to charge commensurately. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if you're in the restoration business, or if you're, I think one of the highest ones is DUI attorney. You can pay upwards of $1,000 a click.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is a tremendous amount of money for one possible lead.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they know that, you know, I mean, you're once that happens, you're in for 20 grand no matter what. So, you know, they know that the businesses can afford to pay that.
Yeah,
money.
That's how Google takes its commission almost.
I mean, right.
They know what the value of that lead is. That's,
yes.
Which, I mean, and this is why, you know, Google and Facebook are multi-billion dollar businesses.
Sure.
Because this is how their primary revenue stream is this right here.
Yes.
And that's, I've heard it said, and this can kind of maybe segue into something else. Google and Facebook, when it comes to ads, they'll gladly take your money.
Sure.
But it doesn't mean that ad spend, in this case, equates automatically results.
Right.
It's really good to have, kind of like we were talking off the mic, it's really good to have an expert who knows what they're doing to guide you through that. Because I think you, and again, you said, going into the Google dashboard in particular, I mean, it's insane. It doesn't make sense to the average person.
It's bonkers.
I mean, I consider myself a techie person, and I've seen the backside of that, and I'm like, I don't get this.
Yeah.
It's wild.
There's charts and numbers, and you can sort a million different ways, and it's complicated. And Google didn't get to be one of the largest corporations in the world by being super generous.
Yeah.
So, like, you have to go in and babysit your search terms because they'll serve your ads for stupid searches.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're in the church space, I don't know, they might serve, you know, if somebody searches for, you know, cleaning company near me, they may serve your ad for that and somebody might click on it.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of an extreme example, but you do have to get in there and babysit your keywords to make sure that you tell Google, hey, don't serve my ad for this because this doesn't make any sense. So, you know, negative keyword management, optimizing the bidding, making bid adjustments based on time of day. So Google knows when somebody converts. You set up the conversions on the back end, but if somebody clicks on your ad and goes to your website and fills out a form and you have it set up to track that, then Google knows when that conversion happened. Mm-hmm. So if you get 50% of your conversions for church on, you know, Saturday night between 7 and 8 p.m., you can make bid adjustments to bid higher on Saturdays between 7 and 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of things that you can do to optimize that campaign. You just have to know what to do and you have to be on top of it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing where most people fall down is they start their Google Ads campaign and set it up and then they just let it run.
They just let it go.
And they're, you know, Google's charging them crazy money for ridiculous searches that have no bearing on their business.
Well, we're going to continue the conversation next time. And until then, I want to thank you for joining us for this episode. And I want to give you a reminder to subscribe on YouTube and wherever you're listening to podcasts. You can also check out the episode's description to learn more about featured products and services from Church Media HQ. You can also learn more about the show's guests and content contributors. Now, if you do find this content to be helpful, then help us out by leaving us a 5-star review and sharing this episode with other church leaders like you. Also remember, Church Media HQ, well, we're so much more than our weekly episodes. You can actually access creative resources such as weekly graphics, custom design requests, website setup, creative coaching, and a lot more. And all of this is available for free at churchmediahq.com. Well, until next time, I want to give you our infamous reminder that it's time for you to try something new, because you're going to find that it's so much better to fail trying the incredible than it is to succeed at doing just the average. We'll see you next time right here on Church Media HQ.